Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crypto Market Rundown, where we go over everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. From the fundamental in the news to the technicals on the charts, we spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And this week, I know what you're thinking. You're saying, hey, we're coming back. We're almost exactly where we were a week ago. What could possibly be going on in crypto that we need to know about that's happening right here, right now? And the theme of this week's market rundown is going to be that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. In fact, there's a lot of data that's pointing towards this, saying, hey, buckle up for the short term. But after September, we could be looking at some really good price action, some really positive price action. And there's a couple catalysts that are kind of spearheading this charge in the right direction. And that's what we want to show everyone in today's episode. So before we get too deep, TiVo, how are you feeling over there? Are you staying safe in these choppy waters of the crypto markets?
Yeah, Mama said there would be days like this, right? So we were just talking right before we hopped on that we got to try to bring some light to the people, because even ourselves, if we're being honest, like this, you know, range that is seems to be never ending. And then as we get closer to this political apex of the presidential election, it's just there's so much to swallow and handle. It just seems overwhelming sometimes to not have things, you know, go the way you want to. But I think that's where champions are made, right? Champions are made in the off season when you're training, when nobody's watching, and then everybody watches the Super Bowl. So that's why we're here. We're in the trenches.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Just when we thought it maybe couldn't get any more choppy, we saw a lot of choppy price action last week. So to kind of highlight it on Bitcoin specifically, Bitcoin was consolidating in around a $3,000 range between 57K on the low side and around 60K on the high side. What this does is this puts Bitcoin back beneath most of its major moving averages, such as the 20, the 50, and the 200-day moving averages. And it was in a very, very tight range up until recently, about halfway through the week. On Wednesday here, we saw Bitcoin begin to break down a little bit lower into the 55, 56K area. And with this, we're going to elaborate on it in a little bit here, but a lot of this really does stem from just so much uncertainty at the moment. I mean, you look at political uncertainty. The U.S. has the primary elections coming up. You look at the unemployment rates of the TradFi side, uncertainty there. You look at the rate cuts that could be coming to the U.S. markets and the Fed rate cuts that we have that are very likely coming. That's another piece of uncertainty, because people look at the data that is correlated with that. And we kind of touched on that last week and saying, hey, that could produce some volatility, especially towards the downside, historically speaking. And so there's all these factors at work, and people are looking at the crypto markets and saying, hey, you know, is this still considered a risk on market? Which I think it is. And if so, how do we play this accordingly with all these moving pieces, with PMI, with unemployment, with the rate cuts, with the elections, with all these things? You know, how do we factor all this into crypto? And it seems like it's pretty indecisive, at least up until the point right now. Now, on top of this, you know, last week we took a look at the DXY, the DXY, which stands for the US dollar currency index, which has historically been inversely related to Bitcoin, and that thing has been tanking as well. So there's all these moving pieces. There's all these different parts and components that we need to look at. The one thing that I will say is that despite what happens in the short term, and I think that we do have more choppiness ahead, I don't think we're out of the choppy waters yet here in the crypto markets. But the two things that I will say is that the mid to long term of crypto still looks very good. We're going to look at the charts probably towards the end here, but what you'll see is that Bitcoin is still in a bull flag. It's still in a falling channel. It's still bouncing off the top of its previous consolidation zone. It still has that large scale cup and handle. There's a lot of things that are going good for the longer term price action of Bitcoin. All that still looks healthy. It's not until you zoom into the short term where you get this uncertainty and this choppiness. And that's exactly what we want to talk about in this rundown today, because there's a couple catalysts that are contributing to this. Now, the number one thing that we want people to understand here, we can actually flash a really cool image up on the charts for you all, is that September is notably not the best month for the crypto markets. In fact, September is the worst performing month for Bitcoin, and 7 out of the last 10 Septembers have been red. And so Tivo's showing it on the screen here, but if you go to that September column and you look vertically down, you can see that its 10-year average is almost a negative 6% yield. It's right at minus 5.9%. And if we go all the way back from 2024 to 2014 down there, you can see that, I mean, with the exception of a few of these months, it is just not a great month for the crypto markets. So September is notably the worst month for the crypto markets. And that's what we're entering into now, right? I mean, we're at the beginning part of September as we are recording this. And with that, you know, do we think that the waters are smoothing out? I think so, but maybe not this month. And it could take a little bit longer. And in fact, QCP Capital had a really good report on this as well. And I would even go so far as to say that their viewpoint very much aligns with my own. And so what we've seen here, and we're going to put it up on the screen for everyone, I think this is also works as a really good reminder that if you want to follow along with all the visuals that we have, with all the articles and charts and everything that we're talking about and referencing on the screen, you need to go over to our YouTube channel. That's where we have all the visuals that we are referencing during these episodes. So if you haven't gone over, you know, maybe you're an Audible listener, maybe you're a Spotify, maybe you're an Apple Podcast listener, one of those, go over to our YouTube channel. It's the Crypto 101 Podcast on YouTube, and that's where you're going to be able to see all these visuals. But, you know, as Tivo has up on the screen here, QCP Capital forecasts the potential for a Bitcoin rally in October, not September, after a near-term price dip. And again, this really does correlate to my own opinion. I think that we share a lot of a similar mindset and an approach to the short term of crypto, just saying, hey, there could be potentially, keyword is potential there, a little bit more downside, a little bit more uncertainty, a little bit more choppy price action here. And we saw that in the last chart with just how rough September has been historically speaking. I don't think that that means that we have to be red, right? We have seen green months before, but you know, there probably will continue to be some choppy waters here. It doesn't mean that it has to be all down, just like it doesn't mean that it has to be all up, but prepare for maybe a little bit more choppiness over the course of September, potentially maybe even a little bit of red. But I think October is where things start to really look good. And this is because we're heading into the last quarter of the year, which has historically been one of the better segments for the crypto markets. We look at the typical Santa Claus rallies, as we like to label them here. We have those Santa Claus rallies, which typically start to begin around halfway through October. And that's what we've seen in the past, is that's when the crypto markets start to pick up. So just buckle your seatbelts. Again, doesn't mean that we have to go down, doesn't mean that we have to chop around, but historically speaking, that's kind of what we're looking at. And also with just a lot of the uncertainty that we've seen so far, maybe we do see a little bit of choppy price action kind of lasting us over the course of this month. But I would imagine that things start to pick up around the October area. As we're entering into the last 3 months of this year, that's really where I see crypto kind of picking back up and doing quite well. But yeah, I mean, Tivo, there's a lot going on here.
I actually had a Tivo tidbit, if you don't mind. The Santa Claus rally. We didn't talk about this before, but you said that and it popped into my head. You know what an interesting take on that might be? And again, never financial advice. We don't know which way the market's going. But the theory of the Santa Claus rally is kind of these big money managers, they need to, that's not the right word. I'm not even going to say that word. They need to put some makeup on their books, right? So they want to make sure that at the end of the year, when they're presenting to their clients, that they have, you know, the best performing stocks in their portfolio. For example, kind of at the end of this year, depending on how the rest of the year plays out, you better have NVIDIA, or last year, you better have NVIDIA, you better have Facebook, you better have Google. Because if you're, you know, the people that are hiring you to manage their money see that you're not invested in the top performers, they might, you know, fire you. So there's kind of this Santa Claus rally theory of, you know, the best performers are going to get more capital allocation because the people that are under allocated will go there. And then also the flip side to that, there's tax loss harvesting. And so the tax loss harvesting is if there's an absolute dog. We talked about this off air. Boeing, maybe, for example, people might throw in the towel at the end of the year and be like, holy hell, like, what a dog. Like, when's this getting better? Like, let's just take the tax write off on this because we have gains in other areas. And so with the Bitcoin ETF going live earlier this year in January, February, right around like what, the $42,000 mark, we'll call it. I think that's an interesting level to eye up, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But that $45,000 level, let's call it, at the end of the year, if we're above that, these institutions have no real reason to sell. And maybe they'd want to add more, maybe not. But there's no tax loss harvesting to be done in Bitcoin on the TradFi side.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And that's like one of the big levels that I'm looking at for Bitcoin is, can we stay around the low 50s, high 40s? We've seen Bitcoin get just aggressively bought up there at the beginning of September. We'll take a look at that in the charts towards the end. But at the beginning of August, when we had the Japanese carry trade sell-off and how that correlated to Bitcoin, we saw Bitcoin sell off all the way down to around 48, 49,000. And then in the following like 4 days, it was aggressively bought up to almost 62K. So it had this just gigantic move back to the upside. And we know that there's been buyers down there previously. It's the top of one of our old consolidation ranges. It's an area that used to be resistance. We're seeing it tested as support now. And that's where I would like to see Bitcoin at least close the year above. And I don't think it's impossible for us to retest. I was going to say, I've been saying the mid to low 50s. We're already in the mid 50s at this point. I don't think it's impossible for us to test the low 50s. It doesn't mean that we have to, but it's not something that I'm like going to be shocked about if we get. So in fact, I'm kind of even anticipating that we can get that. So I would agree with you, Tivo. You know, and so long as we stay above there, right? I mean, Bitcoin has been green. You're right in the sense that there's no tax loss harvesting to really be done unless people were buying the top and trying to maybe sell off now. But if people bought at the beginning of the year, let's just say that people bought in January or in most of February, they're still in the green. And it's not unless people were doing their buying in maybe like March, April, May, potentially even like July. It's not unless you are in one of those positions that you can even try to tax loss harvest. So again, not financial advice, but it's unique. And it's not nearly as simple as, you know, we were joking about Boeing before this and you brought it up. But yeah, it's not as simple as that. And there's a lot of moving pieces here. But I think as we kind of move into this maybe next little stage, I saw a really cool article floating around saying, hey, these Fed rate or these Fed decisions when it comes to rates may briefly boost Bitcoin, but the fears of a recession could lead to a correction. And I think that that is a great way of putting this here in the sense that people aren't scared about Bitcoin. People aren't scared about crypto. People aren't nervous about a lot of that stuff. What people are nervous about at the moment is a recession. And I think that is where a lot of the negative price action is coming from, is not because of anything that is necessarily fundamentally wrong, but it's because of the potential fear of a recession and how that affects risk on assets. And that's why we're seeing a little bit of a sell-off here. It's just people are nervous. And we mentioned all those potential catalysts, right? We have the Japanese carry trade. We have PMI. We have inflation. We have rate cuts. We have the elections. We have all these different things. And people are just nervous about where we are at now. And there's already some analysts saying, hey, if we're not in a recession, it looks like we're heading into one. And people are just nervous because, you know, if we're seeing that happen, then that would mean people are going to dial back on their risk on assets. And crypto is kind of inside that pool. Now, the good thing that I will say here is that, or maybe at least just the redeeming quality of crypto, is that we have seen the crypto markets mature to a point where they are no longer heavily correlated to TradFi. We've seen this happen even yesterday. I think it was a great example. I say yesterday. It was on August 3rd. Stock market was getting peppered, just hammered. Everything was falling. NVIDIA was subpoenaed. It was a bloodbath in the markets. It was one of the worst days that we've seen in quite a long time, if you exclude the Japanese carry trade fallout. It was one of the worst days that we've seen in a long time. I think NASDAQ fell by over 600 points. And most of the crypto market was holding on better than the indices, and most stocks were. And again, we've seen the crypto markets mature to a point where they're not as heavily correlated to the stock market. They have minimal correlation at this point. I think the only association that you might be able to make is this, is just the fact that they're both considered risk on assets. So they're in this overall pool, like the most broad term that we could say, where we have risk on and risk off assets. And I think that's really the only correlation that we can still make over here.
Yeah, and even while Bitcoin is definitely in some sort of like a risk on asset, I think while people are maybe a little iffy about the short term, the long term picture is still there for a lot of people and a lot of new people definitely over the last year alone. And I know you pulled this tweet about pensions and endowments that are currently invested in crypto funds.
Yeah, you know, this fits the narrative perfectly because like you said, you know, in the short term, there could be choppiness. There can be some uncertainty, you know, especially in a month like September, but the long term still looks great here. And a lot of this news isn't even related to Bitcoin in the first place. And the only kind of news that is coming out here that is related to Bitcoin is stuff like this. When we look at pensions and endowments that are currently invested in crypto funds, let's take a look at this. You might recognize a few of these names. We have Yale, Harvard, Stanford, MIT, University of California, Cambridge, Ontario, the California Public Employees and Retirement System, Princeton, Duke, Brown, University of Michigan, Dartmouth, Columbia, like huge name schools and institutions and endowments that are invested in crypto funds. Now, it's notable that like A16Z and Pantera and Polychain and Paradigm are all leading the charge on this, but it's not like, oh, you know, my, you know, third uncle that lives in the middle of nowhere has been ranting to me about crypto this and crypto that. It's like, no, it's like these are the some of the most prestigious universities and endowments and pension funds that are out there, and they're all invested in the crypto funds now. And I think that's really notable the direction that we're heading in.
And I find it really funny that MIT has a bag of Bitcoin and crypto, and while Gary Gensler's like totally against it and anti it, meanwhile, we can go dig up a lecture on Bitcoin that he gave at MIT. So I just find that to be quite the conundrum for him.
Oh, it definitely is. It definitely is. I mean, people can't wait for that guy to be out of office. I don't think anyone likes him anymore. He goes after everyone, crypto, non-crypto. Yeah, his past, MIT, you name it. There's just, it's almost comical, isn't it, TiVo? It really is.
Yeah, especially when MIT holds a bunch of crypto, and just I thought it was a great, if you haven't seen it, you could search Gary Gensler Bitcoin MIT speech. It's on YouTube. You know, you can watch it. I think it's like an hour long. And you know, he's not necessarily touting to go buy it, but he's just educating people on it and kind of comparing it to the Howey test, and like you compare what he said in that speech versus what he says as the SEC chair, and it's polar opposite.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Ethereum. We have an Ethereum update. People love it when we come back and give updates on this stuff. I mean, Ethereum, after all, is one of the largest ecosystems that is out there. And what we've actually seen here is that Ethereum activity, we're going to put it up on the screen, Ethereum activity hit an all-time high as fees plunge by 99%. So what in the world is happening over here? Because people are confused. Essentially, the conundrum that we have here is that on-chain activity is reaching new highs for this year, but the fees are down by 90%. Some people are saying this bullish. Some people are saying it's bearish. The issue is that when you are looking at the revenue for Ethereum is at 2024 lows. So we have a drop in fees, a high in activity, but a drop in revenue. And this is kind of the double-edged sword. A lot of this is due to things like Denkun and the other upgrades that Ethereum has made in the last couple of years to drastically reduce transaction fees. And it was necessary. I mean, there was times where these things were getting absurd. They were 10, 20, 50, 100 bucks, depending on when you were trying to do them. And it just wasn't practical for the average person which started pushing people away from Ethereum and to either layer twos or other layer one competitors like Solana. Now, the double-edged sword here is that that was producing a lot of revenue for Ethereum when fees were high and transaction activity was high. Now, with fees getting lower, they're not making nearly as much, even with the increase in transaction count. So it's almost like this double-edged sword where it's necessary for scalability, but it's not the best thing for profitability. And another thing that I've seen here is that Ethereum's inflation rate is actually on the rise again. Now, this is something that I think we talked about a while ago in one of the older school market rundowns that we have done. But if we go over to Dune Analytics, we can see that Ethereum has gone from being deflationary for about a year and a half time to now becoming inflationary. And the change happened right towards around April of this year. And that's where Ethereum's deflation rate fell off and it became inflationary again. Now, what's the inflation rate? You know, is it 5%, 3%? No, it's not anywhere near there. It's at around 0.3 to 0.4%. So compared to most fiats, it's minuscule. It's a very, very small inflation rate. However, we have the fact that it was previously deflationary and now it's slightly inflationary, and that could potentially be a catalyst over here. So like, what do we make of all of this, right? Like, what is the takeaway if we have an increase in activity, a decrease in revenue, a decrease in transaction fees, but an increase in inflation? Well, there's just all sorts of mixed readings. And I think the main takeaway for me is that the most important thing above all else for Ethereum is activity. It doesn't, you know, in the short term, you can see revenue drop. In the short term, you can see it become slightly inflationary. But I think so long as it has activity, in my opinion, that is probably the reigning supreme metric here. Yes, it would be nice to see it be a little bit more deflationary and profitable and produce a little bit more revenue. However, I think that if it is being used, that is the underlying point of a crypto project. The underlying point is to attract people, get mass adoption, get users and activity and all of that. And if you can't do that, if you don't have that, then everything else is null. If you don't have users, if you don't have activity, you're not going to have revenue. If you don't have users and activity, then it doesn't matter what the inflation or deflation rate is because no one cares about using it in the first place. So I think the fact that it is seeing new highs and an uptick in activity is actually a net positive here, even though we might be seeing some things that people would look at as negative. Again, I think we need to look at the bigger picture. And the only reason that we are having some of these like quote unquote negative analytics come from Ethereum is because we made positive changes to fix some of the biggest issues that it had. So, you know, yeah, is it a perfect world for Ethereum? Not necessarily, but that's not a bad thing. Like, it's not as bad as people are making it out to be. And I still think it looks all right, even at a time like now where Ethereum has been having a hard time, right? I mean, Tivo, I don't know if you've seen it, but it feels like Ethereum is kind of getting beat down on social media.
Oh, dude, totally killed. And I think, like, once everybody starts coming out and saying something's dead and done, like we've talked about a lot of times, so what is it, you know, fearful be greedy, be, you know, be more fearful. So yeah, it's like you don't always necessarily want to be on the same side of the boat as everybody else. So when it comes specifically to Ethereum, I think we've seen this before, even since I've been here, like 2 years ago, year and a half ago, Ethereum, you know, was dead. I feel like we've heard this narrative before. I just, you know, with all the innovation and all the other layer ones coming down that have been getting a lot of noise, that, you know, there's a lot of excitement around other projects, which is always good. But I kind of, I would fade thinking that like Ethereum's, you know, dead and done. Like the timeline might have you see.
I would agree. And we see this every cycle. We see this every single cycle where people say Ethereum is dead or this new whatever is going to be the Ethereum killer. We've seen people say, oh, L2s are going to pull all the transactions away from the Ethereum main chain. This new layer one is going to be the Ethereum killer. I see that every single cycle. We have other people say, hey, Ethereum is just dead. And this is just the same stuff that we have seen for, it feels like almost a decade now. Almost a decade, not quite, but almost a decade. And we see the same exact concept get brought up, rinse and repeated. every single market cycle. Now, I will say one of the big things that we need to look for in Ethereum is for Ethereum to reverse some of this dominance. If we look at Bitcoin dominance, this thing is still, relatively speaking, sky high. We zoom out, it's been quite bullish over the last like 2 years almost. And as we are pushing up, it's still really, really high. It's above 57%. This is the highest that we've seen Bitcoin dominance in the last several years. And if we zoom back in, what we need to see is a fall of Bitcoin dominance and a rise of Ethereum dominance. Now, if we zoom out over here, Ethereum dominance has been going down. Bitcoin dominance has been going up. And if we can see a reversal of Ethereum dominance and start to have it uptick again, that would be a very beneficial thing for most altcoins. A lot of people ask the question, when is altcoin season going to happen? When can we expect to see this stuff turn around? And I think one of the biggest metrics that we need to look for is the fall of Bitcoin dominance and the rise of Ethereum dominance. And that is going to be one of the big catalysts. Now, at the beginning of this, we talked about how Bitcoin was still looking great in the mid to long term, and it was just seeing a little bit of potentially choppy price action in the short term. So if we do zoom in like a lot here to the short term, we can see that, you know, is Bitcoin down here at support? No, it's not. Is it up here at resistance? No, it's not. We're kind of in no man's land. This is the choppy zone that we have been in over here, beneath a lot of these moving averages, beneath the AVWAP from the high. And with this, we are just still in no man's land. We're not at support. We're not at resistance. And we're still floating around. So in the short term, could we get more choppy price action? We absolutely can. It's not until we start to zoom out here, and I'm going to switch us over to a daily chart, that we can see that Bitcoin goes and looks a lot better. And so, you know, are we in the middle of this range still? Yes. But the overall structure here for Bitcoin with this move to the upside and then seeing like a falling channel is a good one. I mean, we're bouncing off. You can see the top of this consolidation range from back in the beginning of this year, end of last year, is now acting as an area of support for Bitcoin moving forward. We're also bouncing off this 50-week moving average, seeing some buyers come in over here. And even if we go and we look at maybe the even bigger picture and try to say that this could be a just big old cup and handle for Bitcoin moving into the last quarter of this year. And if this does break out, this is the kind of thing that can send Bitcoin to near six digits, to near the $100,000 mark, which sounds a little bit crazy when we're floating around 50K. But you have to understand that this is a cup and handle that goes from 70K on the high end down to around 15K on the low end. This is a giant multi-year candle chart formation. And if this does play out, I truly do believe it could be something that sends Bitcoin up towards that six-figure $100,000 price point that people have been waiting for forever. Again, I'm not saying it's going to happen today or tomorrow, maybe even not by the end of this year. You know, we'll see. But I do think that in the long term here, that is something that is very, very possible. So time will tell, but as we look at the crypto markets, they really don't look all that rough in the long term or in the midterm. Again, short term, we can get some choppy price action. I think we look at altcoins and how they've been bleeding. A lot of the altcoin bleed that we have seen has not been from them not doing good on like up days and green days. A lot of the bleeding in altcoins and altcoin dominance has come from the red days, where Bitcoin falls by 1-2%, and then we see altcoins fall by 4-6%. And that's where a lot of the strength of Bitcoin has been over here. But again, it is something that we have almost always seen turning around. We always see Bitcoin dominance be the first climbing factor inside of a market cycle. And then as that tapers off, we start to see the rest of crypto really begin to thrive. So there's a lot of factors to look at, everyone. We hope all of you enjoyed this episode. And man, we love bringing all this information to all of you. So all that we ask is that if you like the content that we're making over here, consider hitting that like button, consider hitting that subscribe button. And if you really like the content, check out some of the links in the description down below. Check out our other content on YouTube. And we got a lot more of these headed your way. So thank you all for watching, and we're going to see all of you at the same time, same place next week.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.